correspondence, write to A Time for Prayer, P.O. Box 2032 in Crescent City, California, 95531. Thank you, God bless you, and keep on praying.
good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Dr. Russell Blaylock, from Jackson, Mississippi. Before we get to our program, I just want to announce, if we have any listeners in Southern California, I will be speaking tomorrow evening in Orange County at the Freedom Forum. If you need information on that, why, you can call 714-703-2417. That's 714-703-2417. The following evening, that's Thursday evening, I'll be speaking in Tarzana, in the northern part of the valley there. And if you'd like to know about that talk, you can call 818-892-2283. That's 818-892-2283. And so I gave a talk this afternoon. I'm giving one tomorrow, the next day. And then a week from Saturday, I'll be talking at the Euro convention down there. And we'll go to the conspiracy conference the end of this month. I won't be talking, but we will have a booth. And that, of course, is in Santa Clara, close to Great American. And that's on the 29th and 30th of May. And although I won't be talking, why, Joyce Riley will be there, Len Horwitz, Rodney Stitz, Eric Huffman, and many of the people that we have regularly on our programs. And if you'd like to know more about that, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-099, or go to the website at conspiracycon.com. Well, with that behind us, let's go ahead and introduce Dr. Blaylock. Russell Blaylock is a neurosurgeon, practiced neurosurgery for many years, and more recently he's been writing and researching and providing tremendous opportunity for us to get caught up on a lot of the things that the average doctor just doesn't know. The average doctor is so busy reading his medical journals, he's not getting a lot of the truth about what's going on, because many times the medical journals are influenced by who pays the ads, which makes the journals, many of the journals, function effectively, and why they're not going to come out and bite the very hand that feeds them. Let's just get into the background of some of the fascinating things that are happening. Dr. Blaylock and I talked a little bit earlier, and I just want to ask our listeners, audience, have you had your flu vaccines regularly for the last 5 years? You know, the doctors tell you you should have your flu shot every single year. Russell, what have the studies shown about the relationship between influenza vaccines and Alzheimer's disease?
Well, there's a very interesting study that just came out. It's done by Dr. Hugh Feudenberg, who's one of the world eminent immunologists, certainly written all the major textbooks in immunology and hundreds of papers. He did a study recently in which he looked at people from 1970 to 1980 who had taken the flu shot. It's mainly people in their 50s and above, or up until that point. And what they found is that people who took the flu shot for 5 years in a row increased their risk of Alzheimer's disease tenfold, which was astronomical. I mean, this is a huge increase in the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Now, the reason that he proposes this is true is because the flu vaccine contains mercury, and it contains a significant dose of mercury. So what these people basically are doing is each year they're getting injected with a dose of mercury, and that mercury accumulates in the brain in concentrations 10 times higher than it does in the blood system. The brain selectively removes it from the blood and concentrates it. So each year that mercury is concentrated in the brain. After 5 years of doing that, so much mercury is accumulated in the brain that it begins to shut down all the different metabolic enzymes that the brain needs. It interferes with the transmission of the impulses between brain cells, and the brain cells begin to die. And this is why it's increasing Alzheimer's disease tenfold.
Well, I think that's a frightening thing. I think especially when the CDC insists that we should get both our children at any age giving a dose of a vaccine. Of course, it has, you know, for a small child, you're getting almost, well, tremendous dose compared with what they should be having allowed by the EPA. And then, of course, we're telling our older people, every year be sure to get your vaccine because we're from the CDC and we're here to help you. Has this made any impact on the, you know, general medical profession, or is this just appearing in some of the health journals?
Well, it's just appearing in the health journals. Most physicians don't read this. They're not aware of it. Most physicians know little or nothing about mercury toxicity, certainly nothing about the effects on the brain. They're taking the word of their medical societies, the AMA, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Practice. And what we find in studies that are looking at these academies, they're finding out that there a lot of them have stock in these vaccine companies. Some have actually served on the board of the vaccine pharmaceutical companies. So they have a vested interest in encouraging more people to take the vaccine. And this is why they're even telling mothers their small children should be taking the flu vaccine. Which, if we look at what's happened just in Dr. Feudenberg's study, when the adults, particularly the elderly adults, are taking the flu vaccine and it increases Alzheimer's tenfold, what's going to happen when they start that mercury dose soon after birth?
Well, if you wanted to destroy a nation, you couldn't do a better job, could you?
What we're going to end up is with so many people that are mentally impaired, it will bankrupt the nation.
Well, Dr.
We won't have a force that can work. People won't be able to think. And we'll have so many medical expenses for these people trying to care for them. All of that combined could economically destroy the United States.
Well, Dr. Mark Guyon, I know you know who he is. He's basically a geneticist with over 100 scientifically published papers, peer-reviewed papers, and it is his opinion that because of the vaccinations and the mercury in the vaccine, which they are still leaving in many of the vaccines, they have not taken it out, and certainly we know it's in the flu vaccine, Dr. Guyer thinks that probably one in every six children in America has some sort of medical impairment. We know that the rate of autism has risen from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in every 160. But with the attention deficit disorders and ADHD and mental deficiency, he feels that this could be a figure about 1 in 6 children. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation? And I think you've sort of answered that. We will not have enough money to take care of all the people, and especially all the elderly who've been getting their shots regularly because the doctor told them to, and I'm not criticizing the doctors. They're not getting this information, and that's why you out there in the listening audience need to get the verification and, you know, take this to your doctors and try to get him educated. He'll be a little resentful to begin with, but down the line, he may very well thank you, and I know that's how it was when I was practicing. First of all, when people came in and tried to tell me something about medicine, I was offended, but if I thought about it, I'd take the material, check it out, and I found they were right, I was appreciative. Do you have a copy of that article, or where could we get copies of the article you're speaking of?
You can get it through Dr. Feudenberg's website, which I don't have with me, but
I'll call you off
just
the air.
Look under Dr. Hugh Feudenberg, Feudenberg, and you can get the study through that.
All right, fine. Well, I will call you off air. We'll get the exact website, and we'll make this available to our listeners. You take it to your doctor and ask them how they feel about this, especially if they're recommending the shots for the elderly at this time. And then ask them, gee, if this is really true, and this man really is as well known as we believe he is, why haven't you read about this in your medical journal? Is it possible that the vaccine manufacturers have enough clout that this is not being widely spread? Anyway, we'll make that article available for any of our listeners out there that want to get that. You can just give us a call or drop us a note, and we'll make sure you have it. So now there are a lot of new things that have come out as far as heart attacks. Why don't you pick up some of these new things that you become aware of?
Well, in keeping with some of these great medical scandals, the fluoride, of course, is one of the great medical scandals, the mercury. But the cholesterol scandal, of course, is something that's intrigued me. And what we know is that around 1940s and 1950s, scientists were looking at different causes of heart attacks. And when they looked at the arteries of people who had heart attacks, there's all this crud built up in the vessels. And when they looked at the crud, they identified that as cholesterol. So they assumed, well, if there's cholesterol in the blood vessels, where is it coming from? Well, most likely the diet. And then they started looking at people's dietary patterns, and they found that people that ate a lot of saturated fats, high in cholesterol, they have higher cholesterol levels. And so they made that assumption, not through scientific examination, but just from an assumption that if it's cholesterol in the vessel, it must have come from the diet. Based on that, they told people, well, what we think you should do is eat a lot of polyunsaturated fats, in other words, vegetable oils like corn oil. And there was a heavy promotion for corn oil because it was very low in cholesterol, and all of these low cholesterol diets began to hit the nation. Unfortunately, it had almost no impact on heart attacks and strokes. And the big secret that was being kept from the public is that 50% of all heart attacks and strokes had absolutely nothing to do with cholesterol at all. We knew people with very low cholesterols in that half of the population were having heart attacks and strokes, which told us that this cholesterol theory was wrong. But the reason they didn't tell people about that is because the factors that were causing that half of the population to have heart attacks and strokes, they didn't have any medications for. So they just said, well, let's keep quiet about it. We want to sell some kind of medication to lower cholesterol. Well, then they developed what was called statin drugs. These statin drugs, what they do is they poison an enzyme in the liver that has to do with cholesterol production. And that way it lowers the cholesterol to very low levels. Early studies indicated these statin drugs indeed were lowering the risk of arteriosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. The big secret there was that the statin drugs actually were reducing heart attacks, not necessarily by lowering cholesterol, but by acting as antioxidants, because we know these statin drugs have antioxidant capability.
That's sort of like vitamin E, vitamin C.
Right. All your vitamins, your flavonoids from your fruits and vegetables are also antioxidants, and they're equal to or more powerful than the statin drugs. But nobody wanted you to know that because they wanted to sell the drugs.
And, of course, they're pretty expensive drugs. They've made a fortune on selling that.
Not only that, but the drugs were quite dangerous. The other secret they didn't tell people about statin drugs were, number one, in the early studies, and even now there's death from taking statin drugs, that it severely lowers coenzyme Q10 in the body, which is an absolutely essential nutrient for cell metabolism and energy production. So that the people who take it that get very low coenzyme Q10 have severe fatigue, muscle pains, they have difficulty thinking, they can have such devastating symptoms they can hardly get out of the bed. The other thing they didn't tell them about it is that all the statin drugs either were primarily cancer-causing substances or promoted cancer development. Yet this was known. It was kept out of the physician's desk reference, which is a drug reference for physicians, so that the physicians would not know that the drug they were promoting, in fact, was a cancer-causing substance. So what the physicians did, they concentrated on the cholesterol. They ignored the other half of the population that was dying from arteriosclerosis due to other factors. And they kept lowering the cholesterol. Well, people keep dying of heart attacks and strokes. And it's because what the studies had shown is not the cholesterol itself that's the problem. It's when cholesterol oxidizes. And it's the free radicals in the wall of the blood vessel that's making the cholesterol oxidize. And that means there's something in the cell and the wall of the blood vessel that's producing the free radicals. When they looked at it, they found that a significant number of people who have bad arteriosclerosis have infections in the walls of their blood vessel. There's an organism called chlamydia a significant number of people had chlamydia. And those who had it had a very high incidence of heart attacks and strokes, no matter what their cholesterol level was. They found another group of people who had a viral infection called cytomegalovirus, which is a very common virus. You don't even know you have it, but it's in your wall, your blood vessels, producing this arteriosclerosis. Herpes virus can produce arteriosclerosis. Influenza virus can produce arteriosclerosis. So they knew that there were infections in the walls of the blood vessels that were producing the inflammation, that was producing the oxidation of the cholesterol, and that was the problem, not the fact that you were eating cholesterol in your diet. Most people who eat high cholesterol diets generally don't elevate their cholesterol to any significant degree. Now, there is a reason not to eat high cholesterol diets, and that is they found that people who have the greatest cholesterol consumption have the highest incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And that's because of a different mechanism in the brain. So the statin drugs, number one, are dangerous, and there's evidence that they're increasing the incidence of heart failure. And that's because they deplete the coenzyme Q10 that the heart muscle needs to contract, and as a result, the heart begins to get weaker and weaker.
But does it ever produce any sort of cardiac irregularity?
It may or may not. That depends on other contributing factors. For instance, if you have a low magnesium level and you're taking statin drugs over a long period of time, it could increase heart irritability. You could have an arrhythmia and die from it. If you're eating a diet with MSG in it, go to a restaurant, have MSG, and you're on these drugs, your heart muscle's weak, and your magnesium's low, you're at a very high risk of having sudden death from a heart failure. They've noticed that over the last two decades, there's been anywhere from a 300 to 600% increase in congestive heart failure, which is unexplained. Well, now they better understand it, and there's some caution being put out in the peer-reviewed journal saying that all of these people taking these statin drugs may be increasing the risk of heart failure due to the loss of coenzyme Q10 in the heart muscle. Doctors generally do not tell their patients on statin medications to take coenzyme Q10. Yet this is in the physician's desk reference. It's in the medical literature. There's literally hundreds of articles describing this syndrome. We know that this is the cause of death associated with statin drugs. And there's other natural products like polyclonal, which is an extract of sugar cane, wax, that actually lowers the cholesterol just as well as the statin drugs, but without the side effects. So, there's natural alternatives to statin drugs that can lower cholesterol, but also reduce oxidation of the cholesterol, and therefore they produce a far better protective effect against arteriosclerosis, heart attack, and stroke than these statin drugs. But the pharmaceutical companies are the ones that are pushing these drugs. Now, let me discuss a little bit that other 50% of people in which there's no relationship to cholesterol whatsoever. These people have four factors that are wrong, and it can be any one of these factors can dramatically increase your risk of heart attack. One is called apolipoprotein A. This is an inherited factor, so that these people say you had a father who died of heart attack at 40, and his father died at 40. You tend to inherit that apolipo A, and that's what puts you at high risk. And that's what it does. It makes the platelets very sticky, and that produces thrombosis and a sudden heart attack and death. So that's one of your major independent risk factors.
Robert, we're going to have to take a break here in just a moment, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to cover these four factors. And just hang on, and please hold your calls for the time being. We'll ask for calls later if we have a chance. But right now, I want to let Russell develop these ideas, and I think you'll learn a great deal. This is the information your doctor doesn't know, because much of this is not in the medical journals, and your doctor is too busy. So you're going to have to get him educated. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he's describing the four factors. And right now, many of the people listening to our program in shortwave and the regular stations listening to our commercial presentation. So I'm just simply going to ask Russell if you could cover something else temporarily, and then when our stations return to us, I do want to get those four factors out. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about tonight? We'll get back to that later, but rather than just break off and only give him the first factor of why, we'll get back to those in just 3 minutes when we get back again.
Okay, well, one of the other things we could talk about is the epidemic obesity in the United States, and all the attention is on, oh, the children are not exercising enough, they're eating too many high-carbohydrate sugar foods and all these sort of things. That is a deception. We have overwhelming evidence that it is due to the high content of monosodium glutamate in the food and the different disguised forms of it. We have known from the very beginning, back in 1968, experiments done by Dr. Olney, a neuroscientist, that when MSG is fed to animals, it destroys the part of the brain nucleus in the hypothalamus that produces gross obesity. This experiment has been repeated ever since 1968. In every species of animals that it's been done in, it produces gross obesity. And we know that since humans are more sensitive to this MSG toxicity than any animal species, it's most likely producing the gross obesity in humans as well. And that's because so many of our foods are saturated with MSG. A recent study out of Germany concluded the same thing in Germans. They said Germans are undergoing the same thing the Americans are, and they have traced it down to the monosodium glutamate in the foods. So we have experimental evidence that proves it. We have a society that's consuming more MSG than was used in these experiments. The amount of MSG is increasing exponentially every year. Our teenagers, our children, our pregnant women are consuming huge amounts of MSG. The young age at which they're first exposed, that is inside the mother's womb, is what produces the worst of the gross obesity. So all of this stuff about sugar and lack of exercise is a diversion. My age group ate a lot of sugar, a lot of carbohydrates, did all of the things they claim now, but we didn't have that obesity. And that's because we didn't consume near the amount of monosodium glutamate as we are now.
And, you know, I think one of the interesting things is that when you start looking at the labels on the various products you buy, especially your prepared foods, frozen foods, frozen dinners, they conceal this MSG by using all sorts of other names for it. So that unless you really know what they're talking about, you have no idea that it's loaded with MSG.
Exactly, and some foods have as many as three or four different types of MSG in it, so that we're being absolutely saturated with it. Now, there's another syndrome produced by feeding animals MSG, and that is insulin resistance, which is type 2 diabetes. That has also increased exponentially in this generation. We're seeing teenagers and preteens even developing type 2 diabetes, which was unheard of. Yet we see it in the experimental animals. It produces the exact changes that we're seeing in our society: elevated lipids, the hypertension, the insulin resistance.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock. If you have not read his book, A Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, or his book on excitotoxins and MSG, and the other one was, you're going to have to remind me that the title...
Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients.
Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. We carry all three books. They're important. Now, while we were away, Dr. Blaylock was talking about the danger of MSG in your food, and it's been found that it actually produces damage in the brain responsible for obesity, and one reason it's felt that we have as much obesity in our society has nothing to do with lack of exercise. It has nothing to do with eating too much sugar or fats. It has to do with the MSG, which actually destroys part of the brain in our children and produces the problems. It also, of course, is related to hypertension and to type 2 diabetes, which is just increasing at a tremendous rate. Would that be a fairly fair statement?
Exactly, and in fact, they've given this constellation of symptoms a new name. They call it Syndrome X. But when you look at these experimental animals in which they produce this exact constellation of symptoms, the hypertension, the high lipids, the gross obesity, and the diabetes, it's exact what we see in the human population now in our young people. All animal species that are fed MSG during a period of immaturity, in other words, right after birth or soon after, develop gross obesity. The German studies have shown the same thing in their society, and they're calling for removal of all MSG from food because they're absolutely convinced from the scientific studies that monosodium glutamate is the cause of gross obesity in their society. The reason we don't hear that here is because there's so much money invested in putting these excitotoxic substances in food as taste enhancers. Some foods have as many as four different excitotoxins in them.
And they call them, they call them hydrolyzed. What is it?
Hydrolyzed protein, right. Soy protein extract, whey protein extract, vegetable protein extract, natural flavorings. You know, they have all these names because the law allows them to change the name from MSG to all these other names as long as it's less than 99% pure. So it can be 98% pure monosodium glutamate, then you can use one of these fake names. Just call it flavoring, or you can call it spices, or hydrolyzed protein. And the public is unaware. For instance, many of the soups, Campbell's soups, I've seen at least four different excitotoxins in a can of soup.
But boy, they sure taste good, but the trouble is they're destroying your brain.
Right, and it's not just the obesity it's producing, but it destroys the part of the brain that's associated with the ability to think, to learn, to remember, and to use your higher brain functions.
And if I could make a suggestion, Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Excitotoxin, The Taste That Kills, is an excellent book. It will give you a tremendous amount of information on this subject.
There's one other thing that's recently been discovered about monosodium glutamate. And that is that it dramatically promotes the growth and spread of brain tumors. A group of studies, have found also that it causes other tumors to grow very rapidly and to spread very rapidly and all over the body. This is colon tumors, breast cancers, prostate cancers, lung cancers, and that if you block the glutamate from monosodium glutamate, in other words, keep it from reacting with these cancer cells, the cancer starts dying off. It begins to shrink. When you do chemotherapy or radiation therapy and you block that monosodium glutamate or the glutamate component of it, the chemotherapy works a lot better. So we see there's a tremendous stimulating power from MSG. And you have all of these cancer patients in the United States who are eating these foods full of MSG. It's making their cancer grow faster, it's making their cancer spread throughout their body, and it's making their cancer incurable.
Well, now, is there a tendency at all to actually increase the rate of cancer in people who use MSG?
Oh, yeah, because MSG produces an enormous number of free radicals. Well, if we look at what are the prevailing theories of cancer causation, well, it's chronic exposure to free radicals. In fact, one study showed that if you expose animals to MSG early on, they continue to produce high amounts of free radicals all through their life, just from a single exposure.
Well, it's rather discouraging when we see these things happening. We see the increase of cancer and the people dying of cancer. You didn't see this 50, 75 years ago. Sure, there was cancer, but nothing like we see today. It's increasing in frequency and severity and so many people dying. Many of them dying unnecessarily. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock. Don't even think about changing that dial. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and once again, some of our listeners across the country are taking the break, and after that, we won't have a break until the end of the program. Our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we've just been talking about the effect of MSG on cancer and cancer patients, and the fact that if the doctor doesn't understand this, and this is well described in the medical literature, isn't it, Russell?
Oh, yes. These are recent studies that have come out in major journals.
Okay, so this would be the oncologist would be aware of that.
Well, if they read their own research literature, I mean, this is coming out of their cancer journal.
Okay, and so then they should just be getting their patients completely off of MSG, and of course, I'm sure is this why these diets that depend predominantly on fruit and flavonoids and things like that seem to do so well with cancer patients and seem to cut down on their reaction, their disability?
Sure. If you look at the lowest glutamate levels in any diet, it's a vegetable diet. If you look at the highest glutamate content, it's in diets that contain meat, particularly red meats. Red meats are very high. Soy is very high in glutamic acid, which is the component in the MSG that produces the cancer growth. So the people that are consuming a lot of soy actually are making that cancer grow faster.
And so there's been such an emphasis on soy and soy meal and various soy products, and this is actually creating more problems than good?
Sure, particularly after you develop the cancer. For instance, some of the more recent studies on breast cancer have shown that soy actually makes breast cancer grow faster. Well, now we know one of the reasons is because of its high glutamate content. Also, the genistein, which is the estrogenic component of soybeans, stimulates cells in the breast cancer receptors that make it grow faster and spread more widely. So these things are known, but nobody's telling the general public. And this is kind of the whole idea of the title of my book, Health and Nutrition Secrets, is that these things are known in the medical literature. They're known in the scientific literature. It's just the public that's not being told. And physicians don't know it because they're so busy practicing medicine, they don't have time to research these things.
And I think that's absolutely true. And the other thing is that the average doctor doesn't really think that nutrition plays that much a part because he's never been trained in nutrition. This is not stressed in most medical schools. And this many times these articles do not appear in the specialty journal they're reading regularly. It's not mentioned at the meetings they go to. And so they're totally unaware, and there's nothing wrong with us trying to educate them, is there?
No, not at all. They need to be educated.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we have a caller on line one here. And let's see who we have. Hello, who do we have calling?
My name is Brad.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good, actually.
Do you have a question or comment?
Well, actually, I've read Mr. Blaylock's book and was really enjoyed it. It's a great read, and actually been passing around to some of my friends and fellow coworkers who are interstate truck drivers. Anyway, my wife and I, we have six children, and you know, we're really careful about the things we eat, and we don't go out to eat, and we make our own bread and all these kind of things. Anyway, we've noticed that there are a lot, I mean, just like doubling or tripling the number of chemicals that they've been putting in absolutely everything. I mean, like metabisulfate and just, I mean, just stuff that should never be in food. I mean, like case in point for me is burrito shells. You know, I mean, talking something simple. Why? I guess my question is at what point did they start putting in, or, you know, what's the point of putting in all these extra things besides the MSG?
All right, that's a good question. Did you get the question, Russell?
Yes. Well, Brad, the thing about it is once they start processing food, they worry about texture, they worry about taste, they worry about appearance, and so all of these chemicals are used to address those things. So they want their food to look good. They want to have the texture that when it's on your tongue, you don't feel like it's gritty or lumpy or something. And so a lot of these things change all of these things, these aspects of food, so they can sell them, so they can beat out their competitor. The monosodium glutamate is a taste stimulant. So that anything you added to tastes a lot better.
I understand that.
So one of the problems, for instance, with sulfites, a lot of foods, they add sulfites to. Well, sulfites break down into a very toxic substance called cysteine S sulfonic acid, which is a very powerful excitotoxin. It's about 10 times more toxic than glutamate.
Really?
So all of these foods containing these chemicals, not only are the chemical itself can be dangerous, but it can have synergistic actions with other chemicals that are added that are never tested for.
Yeah, not including free radicals. Huh.
Well, most of them are doing their damage by producing free radicals. Some of them do it by directly interfering with enzymes.
Right.
Some of them stimulate certain biochemical reactions that are harmful. So there's a lot of different methods by which these chemicals cause problems. And they're not adequately tested. And they never test for synergy. That is, the interaction that magnifies these toxic effects. That's never tested for at all in the laboratories in the United States of the FDA.
Here's another question for you. You're familiar with canola, correct?
Canola oil, right.
Yeah, well, which is just rapeseed oil.
I'm against it.
Yeah,
because a lot of your canola oil, number one, is genetically engineered. It's genetically modified. The other thing is it contains polyunsaturated components of the N6 fats that are harmful. They're immune suppressants. They stimulate immunity. And it contains toxins from the canola itself. So there's multiple reasons not to use canola oil.
Right. Actually, I received a 2-page sheet from a friend of mine. It says that the Canadian government paid USDA $50,000 to accept it and to change its status for food use here in America.
I wouldn't doubt that at all.
There's a lot of money that changes hands, believe me. And if you are a government employee and you're a good boy when you're in government, lots of times you can retire and get a good job working for a vaccine company or a food production company or one of the companies out there. That's how the game is played. Really, these people don't care about the public. That's a great tragedy. Hey, thanks so very much for calling, Brad. I appreciate the plug for Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Do you have anything else you want to ask?
Well, I don't want to ask, but I guess I want to tell your listeners, which I know you got a lot of them out there, and that is, life's getting tough. Get as simple as you can. I don't care if you get a goat or a cow or make your own bread. Do everything the simplest possible way. Get yourself out of debt. I mean, that's what we've done. We've been doing it for years. And, I mean, we have 7 children, and we live great.
Okay, God bless you. Thanks
Excellent
so much, Brad. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And that's
right,
pretty good advice, don't you think?
Excellent.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question for Dr. Blaylock, why our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Russell, you were starting to tell us the 4 things that will produce the heart attacks in that 50% of the people who do not have a problem as far as their heart attacks are not related to cholesterol. So, what were the first one, of course, was some sort of hereditary tendency that made your platelets sticky. What were the other 3?
Well, if you have that ApoA gene, that 70% increased risk of heart attacks and strokes, and that's hereditary. It can be controlled very easily by supplements like lysine, vitamin C, and a form of niacinamide called inositol hexaniacinate. So all of those can significantly lower that ApoA and reduce your risk. The second one, and very, very important, is called C-reactive protein. What this is a measure of inflammation in your body. Inflammation is now being seen as a central cause for numerous diseases. For instance, Alzheimer's disease, inflammatory disease, Parkinson's disease, heart attacks, strokes, arteriosclerosis, all inflammatory disorders. So when you measure the amount of inflammation in your body with a C-reactive protein test, you're measuring how much inflammation you have going on in your body. And what they've discovered, and this is getting widespread press in the cardiovascular journals, is when they find the C-reactive protein is elevated, it just dramatically increases your risk of dying of a heart attack or stroke, more so than an elevated cholesterol, infinitely greater than an elevated cholesterol. If your C-reactive protein is elevated and you have a high cholesterol, you're at a very high risk of having a heart attack or stroke. If your C-reactive protein is low, then you're extremely low risk, even if you have a very high cholesterol level. So that's very important.
Is there anything you can do for the if you have a high C-reactive protein?
Well, number one, you have to find out what is the source of your infection. And like we said, you can have infections like the chlamydia. You can have cytomegalovirus. If you control those infections, the C-reactive protein falls very quickly. Also, things like vitamin C, your flavonoids, quercetin, curcumin, asparagine, they all lower the C-reactive protein rather dramatically. So there is things that you can do to lower your C-reactive protein and, consequently, your risk. The third one is homocysteine. That's getting an awful lot of attention, and they're getting ready to add that as a regular cardiovascular test now. Homocysteine is a chemical produced in your body as a byproduct on the way to producing some more important chemicals like methionine, and has to do with B12 and folic acid as a coenzyme producing DNA repair and these sort of things. So the homocysteine, if it starts building up in your blood, even at high normal levels, that dramatically increases your risk of a heart attack and stroke. And part of the reason is because homocysteine is an excitotoxin. It stimulates free radical generation and produces inflammation. So it's connected to the C-reactive protein. If you have a very high homocysteine level, you're almost certain to have a heart attack and a stroke. Now, it's very easy to lower the homocysteine level. Number one, there's various dietary things you can do. Avoid decaffeinated coffee, lose weight, exercise regularly, avoid stress. All of these things are known to significantly raise homocysteine. Then you can take vitamin B12 and folic acid, which dramatically lowers the homocysteine level. When it's resistant, you can do some other things like DMG, dimethylglycine, which is another supplement you can get in any health food store that will even lower resistant homocysteine. When you lower the homocysteine down to the lower range of normal, your risk falls precipitously. The final factor is called fibrinogen. Fibrinogen is a clotting factor in your blood. If you happen to have a lot of fibrinogen, then you're at a risk of thrombosing. That is, your coronary artery will clot off. Now you can control fibrinogen by taking things that thin your blood, like aged garlic extract thins your blood a little bit so it flows better and you're less likely to have a thrombosis. Ginkgo biloba improves blood flow through the heart arteries and acts as a slight anticoagulant, not like taking an aspirin a day. That also improves the blood flow and reduces the damaging effect of fibrinogen. Ginkgo biloba also reduces C-reactive protein. So there's a lot of interaction here. Now, these are independent, so each one independently can raise your risk, but if you have more than one of these elevated, let's say you have a high C-reactive protein and a homocysteine elevated, then you're an extremely high risk. You better do something and do it quick. If you have three of them elevated, then you're in real trouble. So these are quickly being recognized as major, major risk factors for heart attacks and strokes. But the reason that they've been ignored for all this time, even though we've known this well over a decade, is because there were no medications that would lower these things. They're only lowered by diet change and by supplements. And the pharmaceutical companies couldn't make any money off of it. So here, half of all heart attacks and strokes are known to have nothing to do with cholesterol, have been known all along to have nothing to do with cholesterol, but they kept it quiet from the public and just let those half of the population die because they didn't want to tell them that we can't give you a drug that's going to help that. But we can give you a drug that will lower cholesterol, even though the drug itself is dangerous and may ruin your brain, increase your risk of disease, heart failure, etc. So these are the kind of things that the public is not aware of. Even their doctor generally is not aware of, even though they're beginning to learn about it, independent risk factors. And they're not transmitting it from the doctor to the patient because the doctor's not aware of it.
Well, I hope that many of our listeners out there want a copy of this a tape. And, of course, you can get that by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. Right now we've got John calling from Post Falls, and we've got Steve in Detroit, and other people are calling in. So, John, did you have a question?
Yeah, I certainly had a question. Dr. Blaylock, my ears perked up when you mentioned the sulfites generating a potent excitotoxin in the brain, and another guest of Dr. Stan's, Bill Sardi, mentioned red wine, and there's powerful, at least anecdotal evidence that the resveratrol in red wine mimics caloric restriction, which is the gold standard, as you know, of reducing free radical pathology and promoting longevity. And I was just wondering which effect, in your view, predominates, because there's at least that anecdotal evidence that the resveratrol in red wine is good, and yet it also has the sulfites.
All right, what are your thoughts on that, Russell?
Well, you can buy sulfite-free wines.
Interesting.
You know, it's not necessary to buy it with the sulfite. But sulfite, as I said, it's 10 times more potent excitotoxin than glutamate. So the effect on the brain is terrible, and it's going to increase your risk. Now, the advantage of the resveratrol and the other flavonoids in the grape itself is that they act as protectants against excitotoxicity. So it reduces some of the effect of that sulfite toxin. Resveratrol, of course, is a very powerful inhibitor of prostate cancer, and may very well inhibit breast cancer as well. It's very protective of brain cells, not just from the excitotoxic aspect, but from free radicals and other types of damage in the brain. So the advantage of the grape itself and the extract from the grape are tremendous. The alcohol is a negative. But alcohol is also an excitotoxin blocker. One of the most potent inhibitors of excitotoxins is alcohol. So the little bit of alcohol, say in a glass of wine or two glasses of wine, actually protects your brain against the excitotoxins.
Okay. Well, anyway, thanks very much for calling, John.
Yeah.
We got a full board. I want you to go to Steve in Detroit. Steve, how are you hearing us? Are you hearing on shortwave internet or the local radio station?
On the internet, sir.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I've got a comment and two questions. That Health and Nutrition Secrets is the most valuable book in my library. I've got to buy a second copy to loan out. I'm not going to let it out of my hands.
All right, fine. Well, you know our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. I appreciate that comment. Did you have a question?
Yes. Where or how do I track down a chronic fatigue specialist? I've considered contacting a doctor up in Canada, Dr. Scott or someone.
That's Don Scott. He's not actually a doctor. He's just he's a researcher. Russell, what would you say to people with chronic fatigue? What can you do for them?
Yeah, Steve, I thank you for your compliment on the book. A couple of things about chronic fatigue. I would get in touch with Dr. Garth Nicholson right there in California. He's doing some work with mycoplasma infections and chronic fatigue, which I think is very important because it may play a major role. What the mycoplasma does is it increases the production of excitotoxins in the body. The body produces its own excitotoxin.
Yes.
Mycoplasma does that, and that makes you very weak.
Yes, I'm very familiar with his work.
Yeah, one of the studies on chronic fatigue show that if you keep people off of the excitotoxins in their food, they get better.
Yes, it's made a major difference. I've just stopped eating the canned soups and the boxed foods and just went back to home cooking, and it's been
an
incredible improvement.
Well, even natural foods can have a lot of glutamate in it. For instance, tomatoes can have a lot. Parmesan cheese, most cheeses, mushrooms, they're very high in glutamic acid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always additives. Sometimes it's the natural food itself you have to be careful of. Peanuts are high in it.
Okay, well, I'll try to get a hold of Dr. Garth Nicholson's group. I want to get some testing done. I know that. I understand that what he's on the right track.
Right.
I think he really is. In fact, there's a group over in Europe that has a website on that subject, and they every time I have Garth Nicholson on, they call me and they want to know if they have permission to put our interviews with Garth up on their website. I'll tell you what, I'll get Garth on again sometime real soon. How's that?
Wonderful. Thank you, Doctor.
God bless. Thanks so much for calling, Steve. Let's go to Barbara. I think she's calling from Soquel, California. Hi, Barbara.
Yes. I just wanted to second the motion on Russell's book. It is a wonderful reference for people to have. And one of the things I would like to mention to people is do not be taken in by the term all natural, because so many of these we've tried something. My son is allergic to monosodium glutamate, and soy converts to glutamates, and we found out the hard way that this can be a problem. And so if you have this book, you can cross-reference it, you can go back and forth, you can find out, and especially the book on excitotoxins, and look through these things and find them, because all natural does not mean safe. And if you have any allergies at all, especially to the glutamates, it is very important that you have this information. And Dr. Blaylock's books do have them.
And for our listeners, this is my wife who's talking, my personal advisor on all of these things. But she's read all of this, and she actually uses references on this when we go to the store, because believe me, they're going to trick you. They're going to use these terms like all natural flavor enhancers. What are they talking about? Why, of course, that's MSG.
Well, in fact, what Barbara was saying is exactly right. You'll find, chicken in the grocery store, and it'll say 100% natural. And then you read the label, and it says they use the chicken broth, or injected with chicken broth or turkey broth or some other kind of broth. Well, that's MSG.
That's right.
So a lot of these things are labeled all natural, and of course the government allows them to do it. And the soybean has one of the highest glutamic acid contents of any plant that we consume. So when you hydrolyze the soybean, that is when you dissolve it, make it into soy milk or some kind of soy liquid, you release that glutamate in very high concentrations. And it's just like drinking a glass of monosodium glutamate. It's terrible. So like I said, if you have heart disease, you run the risk of sudden heart death. If you have cancer, you run the risk of making your cancer grow very rapidly. If you have a neurological disease, you're going to make it progress a lot faster and to a much worse degree. People aren't told this. They're just consuming this soy in enormous amounts. They're giving it to their babies, and it's destroying these babies' brains. A 25-year study done in Hawaii found that the people who consumed the most soy had the greatest brain atrophy and the highest rates of dementia. Despite that 25-year study, which was carefully done, scans were done on these people, and this was a human study, not an animal study, people are still consuming soy like it's the greatest health food in the world.
Well, we're in real trouble, and that's why I'm so grateful that you're out there doing all the research. I can just do my programs 5 hours a day, but if I can get you on, we can transmit your knowledge to our listeners out across America, and it's a growing audience out there. And if you're out in that audience, your job is to get people listening so they can get the information they're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh. We're out of time, Russell. Thank you so very much for being with us. And Barbara, thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it.
Russell,
thank you very much.
Appreciate so much for being with us. And again, Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And, of course, give me the third title.
Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients.
Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. God bless you. Thanks so much.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and if you want to get any of those books we talked about, why, you can, of course, always call us at 1-800-544-8927, and we can tell you how to get Dr. Blaylock's books. We've had two or three people this evening who called in spontaneously. I want you to know we did not in any way actually encourage people to call in. Even my wife called in spontaneously to praise the books. I think they're important. We wouldn't carry this material if we didn't think it was accurate. And you've got to help educate your doctor. I'm going to try to get that article on the relationship between Alzheimer's disease and influenza shots. And the decision was that if you took influenza shots 5 years successively, your incidence of Alzheimer's disease went up tenfold. That's 1,000%. And yet the doctors are telling their patients, oh, you have to get your flu shot every year. And they're not aware of the fact that thimerosal is in that. And it's destroying the brains of our children, of our elderly, and even many of our people about my age who are not so old. At least I don't feel so old. Anyway, you need to have this information. America's under attack, not from the terrorists, but many times from people in the CDC and the NIH and other government agencies who are just waiting to the point where they can retire and go to work for the vaccine manufacturers or the drug manufacturers with a nice salary for the rest of their lives. And, of course, we really are not too concerned about the health of the public because if you don't do the right thing, you're not going to get a good job when you leave the government. And, ladies and gentlemen, we got real problems. This is what happens when we have a society that's turned its back on God. When there is no right, when there is no wrong, you make the decisions yourself. Or, as Aleister Crowley had said, do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law. That's what we're teaching our kids in schools today at the DARE program. That is the message of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Don't listen to God. I'm telling you, there's nothing to worry about. Just eat of that fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, and you can be as gods, and you'll never die. And a lot of these people live their lives just that way. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got real problems in America because our nation has turned against God, and our plea to you is help us to get the information out that we talk about here. If you'd like to get it, I could suggest that the program we did this evening, I think, was a very important one. It'll probably be a tape of the month. But if you'd like to get copies to circulate, there's so much information here, and perhaps you might even be able to get your doctor to listen to a program like this. We will get that report on the influenza shots, and hopefully that you can get this to your doctor. It's going to be us to educate the medical profession, and once they find out you're right on one thing, they'll begin to listen to you on others. And specifically, the fluoride is being used to poison our children, their minds, the reproduction. We've got the article by Frenny in 1994 to show the relationship between fertility and fluoride. What a wonderful way to cut back on fertility. Ever wonder why so many women can't conceive? I suspect an awful lot of them are in areas where they have fluoridated water. Well, those of you who do not know our ministry, let me suggest you go to our website, which is radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there or link to the other networks we're on, and you can listen 5 hours a day. And then, of course, you can listen to the archive programs after that and not get a thing accomplished. But we hope that you'll encourage people to listen to some of the programs, get the material, and then help us get the truth out across America, because America is under attack today. And as Abraham Lincoln had said, talking about at what point should we expect the approach of danger, at what point, what should we do to protect ourselves against it? Should we expect some transatlantic military giant to step the ocean and crush us with a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe and Asia and Africa combined could never take a drink from the Ohio or make a mark on the Blue Ridge. Not in a trial of 1,000 years. Then at what point should danger be expected? And I answer, if it ever reaches, it must spring up among us. It can never come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we ourselves must be its authors and its finishers. As a nation of free men, we shall live through all time or die by suicide. And I'd like to suggest we're dying by suicide because we're not involved in the battle. Join us. Pray for America, and of course, we'll be back and to do the next hour here. If you're listening otherwise, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being until we ask for them, because right now we have on the line Joel Skousen, certainly one of my favorite guests, and you'd be amazed how many people will call and say, just in the course of conversation, how much they enjoy Joel's analysis of the events of the week. Joel, thank you so very much for being with us again.
It's always my pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you bring us up to date on what's going on?
Well, I think there continues to be a volume of information now coming out after the initial CBS airing of the unfortunate pictures showing American mistreatment of prisoners. Prisons in Iraq, and now we're finding out, as we must have suspected long ago, this thing has been systematic and going on for a long time. One of the things that tipped me off to that was a series of photographs that one of my military contacts in Kuwait sent to me, showing it must have been 20 pictures of Americans throughout the past year rounding up Iraqi prisoners at various stages during the war, and they were all handcuffed behind the back and stark naked. And it shocked me because I had never, this was before the, just about a week before these revelations about the torture and mistreatment in prison. And I went back to my friend and I said, look, what's the explanation for this? I mean, there's got to be a systematic order going out to strip all of these prisoners naked, and all of these were outside. These were, after they were initially captured, they had their clothes taken off. And they were obviously, in the presence of other people in Iraq. They were paraded before the public. Apparently, the U.S. has had a secret policy of humiliating prisoners all throughout the Iraq War, and everyone has kept a lid on that, tighter than drum. That's very, very disturbing, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think that the policy is to do everything we can to inflame the Muslims of the world. There is no other logical explanation. I remember a year ago seeing the pictures of the prisoners at Guantanamo in their orange jumpsuits, in chains, kneeling down with a black hood over their head. Why would you take pictures like that? Why would our government take pictures like that and distribute them throughout the world? The only possible reason would be to inflame antagonism by the Muslim world against America. I believe it's truly diabolical. I think what's going on, the average American couldn't believe anybody would want to precipitate a Third World War. But, of course, if you were truly the sort of scheming, diabolical individual who thrives on war and violence, do you know a better way to bring this about?
Well, certainly, those protagonists of the Third World War must have an excuse handed to them, and the ready excuse will be that someone has to stop the bully of the world, which is the United States. And I don't think, frankly, Dr. Stan, that there's any way that the United States is going to recover from this episode, mainly because it's now everyone's coming out of the walls with similar stories. There are Iraqis being interviewed, tens of them each day telling additional horror stories. And obviously these people have been around for a long time. All of these stories and occurrences that are coming out now happened last year. And there are indications that they were told, one of the former Iraqi foreign ministers met with Paul Bremer back in, I believe it was November, and complained about the long list of litany of torture and deaths and other things that occurred in U.S. prisons. And he said he refused to even answer him. Just didn't have anything to say.
Well, apparently a lot of this is military intelligence or CIA intelligence. And what would you expect from our CIA? Some of the articles I've read in the papers said that many of the soldiers were upset by what was going on. And when they complained that this was no way to treat other human beings, they were told that this was the way the intelligence wanted it. They wanted to break their spirits so that they could get information out of them. That's no way to treat human beings. We wouldn't appreciate if it was done to our boys. Why should we do it to other human beings? And yet, this is exactly what's going on. We've heard it from the prisoners at Guantanamo about the beatings that were given there, you know, and the humiliation. And now we find it in Iraq as a standard operating procedure.
Well, you know, there obviously are going to be scapegoats and people prosecuted. They're talking about prosecuting 17 soldiers as well as this woman general, Karpinski, who was in charge of the prison there in question. But, you know, I think that Karpinski is going to fall over this, but no one is talking about it, and the news so far is not telling the main story, and that there was a general Pentagon policy to strip prisoners naked, that this did not occur simply in this one particular prison. The photographs that I have in my possession show that this was a general war policy, which had to have emanated from the Pentagon. Another one of the interesting things that's coming out is that we're finding that not only we have a lot of mercenary organizations in Iraq, but they are being given a leadership role even over our military soldiers in the prisons. Now we have soldiers coming out and saying that Blackwater and other types of security companies have been present and have been directing them and how to do the interrogations. Obviously, none of these people had any training, and that's been their excuse, but frankly, you don't need training to know that you don't mistreat prisoners in this way.
But the CIA does, and the CIA has always mistreated prisoners. They did it in Vietnam, and they're doing it now, but they're above the law, aren't they?
Well, that's right. We're talking about dark side operations, and obviously the growth in mercenary organizations, these private contractors for security, is, you know, just the tip of the iceberg. I used to think it was MPRI and DynCorp, and I know in your show we've talked about those a lot in the past. Now we know about Steel Corporation and Blackwater and SAES, and there's several other acronyms. There's almost 30 that I've been able to tabulate now. They're just coming out the wall. But one of the things that's interesting about this, if you or I were to begin to start up a security company and go to the government and say, we want the right to use rockets and grenades and automatic weapons, they just laugh at you. You know, where do you think you get the authority as a private citizen to do that? And yet every one of these security companies have access to all of these military weapons.
But they're all CIA covers, don't you think?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that you can't start one of these corporations without having a background, a connection in government. And they all start with some of these, whether the Navy SEALs or Green Berets. They're tapped out by the CIA, just like Timothy McVeigh was early on to do special operations. And they tell them, look, we're going to sheep dip you or wash you out of them or have you retire from the military, and then we'll encourage you to start up this particular company. Blackwater has a very interesting background. The founder of Blackwater is a guy named Prince. His father's big in Republican circles, conservative circles, related to the DeVos family, you know, who has a lot of conservative credentials. But it's interesting that he ran this thing kind of as a secret operation. He had front men doing everything. He didn't want his name in and everything. He shunned any kind of publicity whatsoever. And I think it's because he was the person who was connected with the CIA, and obviously they had a lot of wealth that came from military contracts in the family, and that's what I think the contracts were given to the family so they could funnel this money into starting Blackwater Corporation.
You know, I'd heard that the third largest military force in Iraq today, first is Americans, second are the British, the third is the mercenaries, about 15,000 of them. from all these various organizations. I think we really need to be a little concerned when we start getting mercenaries to fight our wars. I think the British tried that back in 1776. They hired the Hessians, professional soldiers, but I think that the present ones are far more dangerous because they are trained to kill. Many of them come out of special forces. They're professional killers. Is this really the sort of people we want representing us throughout the world?
Well, there's one major difference, though. When you hire mercenaries, they are simply hired people. They work under you. They become a military unit. They take orders from military commanders, and this is just the opposite. Even Blackwater says, we're not mercenaries. We're independent contractors, and indeed they are. There's no oversight. There's no congressional oversight. There's no budgetary oversight. Nobody but the person who hires them, the administration and the Pentagon, knows what these people do, and they aren't telling. Because they say there's no law that requires us to tell it. And the private companies don't have to reveal anything to Congress, and yet U.S. taxpayer money is paying for these contractors. So this is a recipe for more dark side activities. And I think, as I've explained before, I think on your show, the reason why they've done that is they had so many whistleblowers come out of dark side activities when they would call up normal military people and under threats and swearing them in and under national security and top secret clearance, you're not to talk about this. When they found out they were doing illegal acts and hauling drugs for the CIA, a lot of them became whistleblowers. And I think that's why they have moved to this new method of hiring these so-called private contractors. And these people are merely extensions of dark side operations of government.
No,
very, very sad.
I'm sure, absolutely right.
So the greatest thing... The greatest tragedy about all of this, of course, is that America's reputation, I believe, is forever blackened. It doesn't matter what kind of cover-up happens. It doesn't matter what kind of investigation they have. It doesn't matter how much disgust that George Bush registers over this. Frankly, he knew about this at least 4 months before, according to people who have been going through the paperwork. I covered in the World Affairs Brief soldiers that were discipline for mistreatment of prisoners, and as I covered, they were just given administrative discharges, or they were reduced in rank, or switched to another unit. They're really, no one so far has ever served jail time for any of these things, and there have been people who have died. That's the tragic thing. These get all the publicity because these things are really, truly humiliating, but there are people that have been died. There are people who have been pushed off bridges and drowned. With their hands tied behind their back so that they couldn't swim, the people who we talked about before who had heart attacks under suffering from the stress and the torture that they had gone through.
Well, we're doing this, of course, because Saddam Hussein was so wicked, and because he was such a wicked man, he was torturing the Iraqis, and so we've come in there to liberate them.
Yes, and now all of the verbiage that America put forth about the reasons for being in Iraq and that Saddam was such an evil person, I mean, it's just laughable. Every nation in the world is just literally thumbing their noses at the United States. This is the biggest hypocrite on the block now.
And we came in to rescue the people from Saddam, and so we killed the sons, we captured Saddam, and now we won't allow them to have democratic elections because they won't vote the way we want to. Apparently the initial the general who was assigned to take over control in Iraq once we had completed the military operations wanted to have free elections within 90 days. And he was immediately called back to Washington, D.C. by Rumsfeld and summarily fired. That was the last thing they wanted. He was very, very popular. He had already been in Kurdistan, done the civil thing up there. And when he left, they were throwing rose petals at him. He was beloved by the Kurdish people. He was respected by the Iraqis because he was a man of integrity. And he wanted them to have elections. And there was no way that Rumsfeld and Paul Bremer were going to allow that sort of thing.
Yes, and of course the latest maneuver now is to have Ibrahim Brahimi, who is an old Algerian lackey, worked for the United States and the United Nations for many years. He was one who brokered the sellout of Lebanon to Syria at the end of the Civil War. He's the one that brokered or helped broker the reinstatement of Haiti, the Marxist, of Aristide in Haiti. So this person's been around a lot. He's obviously a yes man to the administration. What's interesting, he's playing the game as if he's not going to allow any of the current persons serving in the Iraqi National Congress or the Provisional Iraqi Authority to anyone who's possibly going to run for election in the next Iraqi election. They can't serve in the provisionary government. But mind you, I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to pick some kind of puppet. It may not be one that's in the limelight right now. I think the United States has learned they can't get away with naming Ahmed Chalabi because he's very much disliked in the United States, came marching in with CIA-funded mercenary troops as a bodyguard. And he's literally been given the task of doling out jobs to Iraqis. He controls several $100 million in contracts that he's allowed to divvy out to the Iraqis, and that's where he maintains his base of power. But he is getting more and more hated all the time. So I think the United States is pulling a fast one by saying that Brahimi is going to, you know, on behalf of the United Nations, going to name this. The bottom line, of course, is that this provisional government is going to have virtually no power, no power certainly over the American occupation troops, no power to change any laws. They have no legislative powers. They have no judicial powers. They're simply going to be a caretaker government on behalf of the Americans to give a propaganda value. And I'm afraid the world already understands what's going on there. This is just simply isn't going to hold water with the rest of the world. Everyone is skeptical now of the United States. And it even brings me to another question. I'm just not sure now that President Bush is going to survive this. I have long said that I thought that the administration was going to try to keep Bush in another term. They were propping up the economy. But this is really damaging to Bush, and it's not going to go away. Neither is the insurgency. The only thing probably that can save Bush is another terrorist attack in which he'll marshal the forces of patriotism.
How about finding the weapons of mass destruction in Syria in October?
Well, you know, I don't know if anyone's going to believe him. You know, there are rumors of them shipping in weapons of mass destruction to try to find them in Iraq.
We're going to plant them so that they can find them, right?
But, you know, the French press has already exposed that, and they've talked about it extensively. I'm just not sure what kind of games the Bush administration can play to salvage it, other than another provoked terrorist attack of which they can garner the American people behind them in knee-jerk patriotism. But that's what this administration is all about. I think it's the beneficial thing about all of these revelations about the torture prisoners is that this has been going on for years. It didn't start with Iraq. Now, it's true that there weren't this type of treatment of Iraqi prisoners in the Gulf War. There were no prisoners that were stripped naked. Of course, they did bury in mass graves a lot of them that they killed in the initial waves of assaults. But as far as we know, and as far as what many soldiers have testified, they were given very, very strict orders that there was to be no mistreatment of any Iraqi prisoners. Something changed, obviously. The quality of American soldiers is relatively the same. They're still foul-mouthed. At least about three-fourths of them, about a fourth of them, I think, are fairly well-controlled and very good patriotic individuals. But I think we have a low quantum, low quotient of quality in the volunteer force.
You're talking now in the enlisted men, not in the officer corps.
Well, no, even in the officers. There's a lot of the officers that do carouse and participate in a lot of these activities. Certainly in those prisons, the officers had to know about this. So
right.
I'm not exempting the officers, though it's a lesser percentage. Probably less than a third are corrupt.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen, and I think it's important that people understand that we're in real trouble. We've inflamed the anger and hostility of a billion and a half Muslims. And do you know a better way to precipitate World War III than to get the entire world against America? And I don't think it's happening by accident. Otherwise, CBS 2 would not have viewed those pictures all across America last week. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Joel, pick the story up from there.
Well, you know, the last point you made is very, very important, Dr. Stan. We have to ask ourselves, how is a controlled news media organization like CBS going to leak this? Now, they have claimed that the Pentagon put pressure on them not to release this. They've delayed for some 2 weeks, they said, in releasing this story. But I find that, frankly, hard to believe. You know, I'm in agreement with you. I think one of the major roles of this Bush administration is to actually promote antagonism against the United States so as to provoke, ultimately, a retaliatory strike, a World War III, that will come about, in my opinion, through a trigger event, most likely in the Middle East. We are setting the stage for a huge war and hatred against the United States' presence in Iraq. The warning to American citizens to get out of Saudi Arabia means that Saudi Arabia is about ready to go anti-American, and there will certainly be increased terrorist attacks against Americans in the Middle East everywhere. So I think the beginning of the end is coming for America. I don't think we'll ever see a success in Iraq after this. The U.S. simply doesn't have any credibility. Can you imagine the governments of West Germany, France, and Spain now trying to convince their people to participate with the coalition of America after this, these stories? It's just not going to happen.
Well, you know, the incredible thing was Fallujah. I mean, the Americans simply withdrew. Now, they did what they should have done a year and a half ago, or at least a year ago, and that they took generals, Iraqi generals, and put them in charge of the military. People not necessarily pro-Saddam, but they were professional military, just like the German military. It was not pro-Nazi, but that was their profession. And at last they've turned control, you know, of Fallujah over to an Iraqi general, and he will have the support not only of his troops, he'll have the support of the Iraqi people in Fallujah.
The problem, though, that's happening is that this story is already getting convoluted. General Salah, that was originally quoted by the Marine Division commander there is the one who was taking over the force, has suddenly been replaced by the U.S.
Oh, God, have they really done that?
Yes, that's right. In other words, he obviously was too friendly with the Iraqi forces. They want somebody who's more of a yes man. I mean, we get the impression that the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing.
They can't be this bumbling and foolish. I mean, the first thing they did was disband the Iraqi army. Why would they have done that? Who was going to, they needed the Iraqi army, and most of these people were not loyal to Saddam Hussein, if we were to believe any of the publicity we had. We needed the Iraqi officers, unless, of course, they had participated in, you know, illegal activities. We needed the Iraqi police force. Instead of that, we disbanded them all, and then we send in our boys with automatic weapons to act for police work. Do you know a better pattern for disaster? We saw what happened when we took American National Guard troops to Kent State University to maintain law and order, and they started getting pelted with rocks, and what did they do? Why, they used their weapons just exactly as you'd expect them to do.
And well, you know, but that was a different story in the sense that those were American soldiers who did that. There was a lot of retribution afterwards. There was a lot of remorse about American soldiers that were doing that. I think what's happening, and one of the reasons why the U.S. made a vacuum of security vacuum in Iraq is so that it could be filled by these private contractors, these mercenaries.
Hold that thought for just a minute, please, Joel. Well, Dr. Stan and Joel Skousen was saying he really feels that we have created a vacuum by destroying, disbanding the Iraqi army, disbanding the Iraqi police force, disbanding all the things that gave some structure to society, and he thinks we created a vacuum so we could justify placing American mercenaries, which are really CIA operatives, most of them are, or at least their organizations are CIA, and they're funded by the CIA. There are about 15,000 of them over there. These are people who are not bound by rules of war. They are professional special service of people who've been, in my estimation, sheep dipped. They're getting $1,000 a day, and they'll do exactly what they're told to do and kill anybody they're told to kill.
And one of the reasons why I think the Bush administration has done this, and it's not just the Bush administration. I want to emphasize that a Kerry administration will continue the same policies despite his feigned opposition to what President Bush is doing. A lot of people have talked in the conservative movement, the militia movement, about the fear of martial law someday, and I've always said they don't have the forces to undertake any form of martial law whatsoever. It takes a lot of people to control them, and I think one of the reasons why they've created this security vacuum is to give an excuse to use taxpayer money to create thousands and tens of thousands of these mercenary-type security forces who will do the bidding of these people, and we're obviously creating the future thugs that will become the Gestapo SS type of people that go against ordinary Americans someday. Good patriotic troops won't fight against Americans any more than the Iraqi troops want to fight against Iraqis. But these mercenaries, I'm afraid, are not of the same ilk. They're carefully screened. The interview with the Blackwater organization saying, no, we have a lot of Rambo types that want to join us, and we're very, very particular. Well, I'm not so sure what their real criteria is. It certainly is indicative that you need somebody who's relatively ruthless, judging by their performance at these prisons and teaching soldiers or demanding that soldiers use interrogative techniques that would be in contravention of the Geneva Convention, indicates that these people are predators. They're criminal. They're thugs. Now, obviously, there's some exceptions to them. What's interesting is the media is starting to interview these private contractors, and all of these interviews are coming out positive. In other words, they're preparing the American people to accept these mercenaries as ordinary patriotic soldiers. And they interview someone, and I just heard it on NPR today as I was driving home from work, that he was talking about, I'm not just in it for money. Sure, I'm making $20,000 a month. $20,000 a month. He says, it's not for the money. I just want to get back into the service. I want to do my duty to the country. We have a real mission in Iraq. But, these are the, if this guy is as naive as he claims about that, which I'm not sure he is, that's one thing. It's probably someone that they're putting out for public consumption for PR work. But I can tell you that the people that are doing the kinds of things that are now being talked about in the media and that are spreading like wildfire are predators and they're thugs, and that's what they ought to be considered. And someday, these people are going to be turned against American people when the protests rise in this next Third World War scenario, which I think will come.
Heaven help us.
Yes, it doesn't look good, Dr. Stan.
Okay, well, is there anything else you want to cover as far as the Iraq situation is concerned?
No, I think that's sufficient. Let's move on to Israel right now, which is a very hot subject.
And didn't the public, didn't the general Israeli population vote against Sharon and is pulling out of Gaza, and he's going to do it anyway?
Actually, it was only the Likud. Now, the Likud is their version of the Republican Party,
okay.
And it's manipulated very much like our Republican Party is. Their leader, Ariel Sharon, pretends to be a right-wing leader. In fact, he is best friends with Shimon Peres, who's the arch-conspirator on the left. His first two governments, were with the Labor Party on the left. He only, under very reluctant circumstances, accepted a right-wing government, coalition government, to form this present government. He's been betraying those people ever since and compromising those right-wing leaders that have come into the government by saying, you're lucky to be here, and you won't be here if you quit.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break here, and when we get back, of course, we're just going to continue, and when we need calls, well, we'll certainly ask for them. But right now, our guest is Joel Skousen of the World Affairs Brief. So we'll be right back here, and we'll tell you in a few minutes about Joel's new website, which I know he wants you going to. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess this evening Joel Skousen and Joel pick up the story of Shimon Peres.
Well, Ariel Sharon has proposed, as most of your listeners know, a unilateral pullout of some 21 settlements in Gaza. These are very strategic settlements. Yes, they have been embattled. They are enclaves of Israeli sovereignty among the Gaza Strip, and they are really crucial towards controlling the terrorism within Gaza because they do intersect, especially the access roads to Netzarim and Gush Katif and several of these other settlements intersect Gaza. The Israelis control these roads, and it keeps the Palestinian terrorists from easily going north and south within Gaza. There are many smuggling tunnels at the southern end with Egypt. Egypt allows a great many arms to flow northward through the Sinai that was ceded to Egypt by Menachem Begin under great pressure from the United States, and that's been used as a smuggling route ever since. There are tunnels wide enough to drive a jeep through, dug underneath the border between southern Gaza and Egypt. And the Israelis, of course, could shut that down. They haven't. They do contain some terrorism. But now they're intending to pull out of the settlements. Ariel Sharon, because he was such a pro-settlement person, he had promised the Israelis that he would never betray any of the settlements. And now he is proposing, of course, unilaterally leaving the settlements, letting the terrorists occupy those brand new homes. We're talking about billion-dollar cities here, Dr. Stan, not just a few little trailer houses. I mean, I've been to these houses. There is every bit of modern subdivision as American subdivisions, only higher quality. And we're talking about these people who have suffered mortar attacks for years, terrorist snipings and bombings and kidnappings, and walking away from their homes and letting the Palestinians simply take over those homes. Not only adding insult to injury, there is no quid pro quo because of this. There's no stop in terrorism. It's simply a unilateral move. It was so unpopular when he proposed it that he decided to put it to a referendum. He was confident, that is Ariel Sharon, that he could manipulate the result. The result came out a resounding defeat. And it's interesting to watch how the media manipulates this this story. I listened to NPR talk about this, and they said, well, it was a low voter turnout, and that's one of the reasons the settlers were more successful at getting out their supporters than Ariel Sharon. That isn't true at all. There was actually a larger turnout than the previous primary, over 50%, which is considered a large turnout for a party vote.
Hold that thought right there. Yes. Well, our guest is Joel Skousen, and he's talking about the vote that took place in Israel, where Sharon had called a vote to see if the people would back his decision to pull out unilaterally out of Gaza, not asking anything at all for the Palestinians in return for giving them billions of dollars worth of housing there. The Likud party voted against Sharon, in other words, a vote really of no confidence for his policy and for his program. So pick up the story there, Joel.
Well, and Sharon had said when he first proposed this referendum among his Likud party members that he would abide by their decision. Then as it looked like the polls were narrowing, and I think the polls were manipulated, you know, we had 20%, it was actually 60% versus 40%, so there was a 20% against this, an extra 20% against this, that had not been focused on by the polls. The polls, anytime you have a more than a 4 or 5% error, you know that they've been manipulating the polls. There's no way that you could have gone from a deficit of 5 to 10% to a win, a victory for the opposition forces of 20% without a manipulation of the polling results. Now Sharon is coming out and saying that he will abide by their referendum, and in the same sentence he's saying, now I'm going to present modified plans. In other words, instead of all 21 settlements, he's going to propose some 6 or 7 settlements be abandoned unilaterally. But one of the problems with this is that several ministers within the higher cabinet level group of the Likud have indicated that Sharon had a much more aggressive policy of abandoning settlements, that the 21 in Gaza were just the beginning. that he actually had over 30 or 40 total settlements that were going to be abandoned, and these were very large settlements. So he was basically just saying, I want to get the foot in the door and get the Israeli people used to abandoning settlements, and then I'll go for more. Now he's having to start back over again. He obviously isn't abiding by the will of the party. And he has another ace up his sleeve as well. His advisors have been telling him what you need to do is ask for a national referendum, not just of the Likud party, but of everyone in Israel. People have to realize that Israel, the majority, is mostly liberal. They're leftists. There's a great deal of communism, of Marxism, the entire Labor Party, and his Hadrut, which was the major labor movement there, was all Marxist-oriented for many, many years. Ironically, it's the large body of Russian immigrants that have come in that have become arch-conservatives and anti-communist and anti-socialist. They're very much in favor of the free market there. But your listeners need to understand that Israel has got a lot of social liberals, a lot of socialist political leaning people there, and if Sharon does have a referendum among all of Israel, I think he'll win the next time, and that may be clearly one of his policies. But he's not going to take no. He's going to continue to push this plan, and the plan is a simple variation of the sellout peace process that the U.S., the European Union, and the Israeli leadership have tried to foist on the Israeli people for years, and that is weaken Israel militarily and economically by bringing it into the original boundaries of 5 by 15 miles. That's just a tiny, tiny state, which is nearly undefensible, so that the Israelis will be forced, I believe this is the theory, so that the Israelis will be forced to call upon UN intervention the next time they have a huge regional war, because they won't be able to defend Israel within that small territory. Now, keep in mind that the Arabs have attacked 5 times of Israel, and they've lost every time. And it's different, you know, if you go out and conquer a territory and try to keep it. That's what's called an occupied territory, and that's illicit. The same thing happened in Cyprus, which we covered in last week's World Affairs Brief, where Turkey came in and invaded, took a third of the island, and has refused to give it back, and that's considered an illegal occupation. But when you are attacked and you beat them back and gain territory, you're allowed under international law to keep that territory because you deserve a buffer zone once someone has attacked you. And that's what's happened 5 times with Israel and the Palestinians. Now, that is not to say that the Israelis have the right to mistreat any of the Palestinians that still live in that occupied territory. They do not. They need to offer them the same civil rights that they enjoy as citizens. And by and large, they have offered many of those, and probably 80% of the same civil rights that most of the Israelis do. But nevertheless, Palestinian leadership is corrupt, just like the Israeli leadership. And the poor people and the Palestinians and the poor Israelis that are sincere, these are the people that are left being manipulated by their leaders. Now, one of the things I might say in analysis of this situation, once again, the point that I have made many times before has been proven true this time. That is, that no matter what they try to do as a globalist government, Israel, in selling out their people, they have the same system that we use here. They have a false right-wing party called the Likud, just like our Republican Party. It's filled with a lot of well-meaning conservatives. But the leadership claims to be conservative just like us, and yet they are not. It's a grand deception. And they have the same system in Israel. They try to sell out their country, and they can't win any of those battles. Somehow the Lord keeps intervening in Israel's behalf, even though they're no more worthy than we are of being intervened for, other than perhaps the promises that God made to the prophets and the fathers. But in the United States, you know, we pray to the same God. We ask for help in saving our country and saving the Constitution, and we continue to lose almost every battle. The ones that we win are usually false wins by false conservatives simply getting the conservative movement to think that they're winning, cheering on a President Bush. But in Israel, they can't seem to win any of the same deceptions. They have just been overthrown again, and they're going to try again. And for some reason, God has the ability to throw a monkey wrench when he decides to support a nation for his own purposes now. I don't proclaim to understand, you know, how they deserve it, and we don't, other than the fact that they're grand promises given to the House of Israel. But maybe you have a better explanation for that.
No, I really don't. In fact, when you stop and think how they've won every single one of those wars, it defies every rule of logic, of military strategy. You know, the first time or the second time, I've forgotten, you know, the other side had so many more troops and so many more planes and so much more military equipment, and yet Israel won the war. Each time, even the last time, I think it was, when they were caught completely unawares, and they almost lost the war, and then at the last minute rallied, and they drove the Egyptians and the Syrians and everybody back, and it was a great victory. You had to see God's hand in that. It could not have happened militarily.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, in our own movement are very critical of the Jews because so many Jews are involved in conspiracy and involved in globalism. And there's a whole section of the movement that is considered anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist, and they, you know, claim that this is a total anti-Zionist conspiracy. And I think it's much more complex than that. I think, frankly, that there are false Zionists that are giving a bad name to that. There are some true religious Orthodox Jews who believe in a Zion, and there are secular Zionists, and there's religious Zion Jews there. But the ones that conspired during World War II to even yield the Jews to Hitler and to stop the United, to lobby the United States so that it would not receive Jewish refugees, there was an awful lot of Jews that were working against their own people. And, you know, a lot of that is not explained simply by saying that this is a Jewish-controlled conspiracy. These Jews that have been operating usually work against their own people. They've usually been Marxists and communists as well. They've been globalists. They've been hired by the globalists.
Now, do you know Barry Shamish?
What about Barry?
No, do you know him?
Yes, I know him personally.
He's going to be, in fact, I had him as a guest earlier this week, and he has some fascinating new views on that, and we'll be having him several times as our guest in this next week or two, and he talks about the Sabbateans, a sect of Judaism. Of course, Barry Shamish is Jewish for our listeners, but this is a specific sect of Judaism, which is really, in many respects, anti-Jewish. And these are, I'm sure, although I don't think he recognizes, these are true Luciferians.
Well,
he feels that these are the people who are really creating all the problems.
And that's what people need to understand, is that, you know, many of the Orthodox Jews that I've met in Israel, in these settlements, are some of the finest Jews I've ever met in the world. There are some fine Jews in the United States. There are also some very, very liberal non-Orthodox Jews here, which you know, have always voted Democratic. You know, they are for Israel, but they're for Israel as a socialist, Marxist type of state. These are the kinds of Jews with the ADL that came out against Mel Gibson's The Passion with such extreme fervor. They really did more damage to their cause. There was virtually no anti-Semitic feeling gendered among the Christians because of the Passion whatsoever. The concentration was on the Christ. It wasn't on the Jews. You know, people understand that there are good Jews and bad Jews, and they have all, just like they're good Americans and bad Americans, and good soldiers and bad soldiers, just as we're finding out on the news. You know, to not give credit to people to say that anything negative about any Jews in history is anti-Semitic is just hogwash. But there are those liberal Jews that take umbrage, and I'm almost of the belief that they love to create conflict because it ends up eventually, you know, just like the civil rights movement originally with its Marxist roots was to create conflict within the United States, and I think often the ADL creates more conflict it tries to solve.
No, well, I'll tell you one thing. Abe Foxman couldn't have done more good for Mel Gibson if he'd been on the payroll. He certainly got a lot of people to see that film.
Well, the bottom line in Israel is that, every single time their government attempts to sell out their own people and deceive them into accepting another phony peace plan, the Lord gets through, usually to the Palestinians. And, the Palestinians, if they really knew what was good for them, they'd realize that the globalists are trying to hand them something on a silver platter. Now, couch that with this caveat. Obviously, the Palestinians know that the globalists have betrayed them every time they have promised them liberty, whether it was Lawrence of Arabia, not Lawrence personally, who was not the betrayer, but General Allenby. The French have never lived up to their commitments. The U.S. has never lived up to the commitments of the Palestinians. Why should they trust them? But what's interesting is that when the globalists in the U.S. Anglo-American establishment try to hand the Palestinians on a silver platter a reduced, weakened Israel, they blow it. They throw some big terrorist attack. For example, in this Likud vote that happened on Sunday, as one pregnant mother with four children was driving to a rally, leaving Gush Katif in Gaza to go and defend her property, she was ambushed by the Arabs. Her car was riddled with holes. I mean, how stupid can you be, when you give the Israeli right an excuse to say, look, we have a martyr now in our midst, who was coming to our rally and was shot to death, a pregnant woman with four young children, and what a tear-jerking thing. How stupid can the Palestinians be to not realize they had a great deal going on behalf of Ariel Sharon? He was handing them these settlements, billions of dollars of settlements on a silver platter, and they ruined it with another terrorist attack. But they can't seem to control themselves. I don't think the Lord allows them to do so. He continues to thrust these monkey wrenches into the worst-laid plans of these evil, conniving men. I rejoice in it.
Well, as someone once said, between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And something very similar to that was said by Whittaker Chambers, and I've always remembered that between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference.
Speaking of Whittaker Chambers, his book Witness is really a marvelous book to read. Such a gifted writer, and he comes out with, you can just feel the sincerity of Whittaker Chambers. One of the most moving books I read in my youth. So I highly recommend that it's a classic in the field.
Amen to that. It had a tremendous impact on my life and on the lives of many others. That's Whittaker Chambers' book, Witness. Well, Joel, we're rapidly drawing to the end of the program. I want to give you an opportunity to get out your address and your new website and tell our listeners just a little bit about that.
Well, the new website is worldaffairsbrief.com, worldaffairsbrief.com. And I'm really excited about it because I've got a couple of researchers that really do a tremendous job combing every story, and they're posting the raw things that they send me for analysis each day. They're posting it to my website, the big center section of World Affairs Brief. It has all the top news stories of the breaking news that's going, and my researchers basically have beat the Drudge Report on three major stories today, and they continue to do so because, he's slipping a little bit with his staff. I know he's not happy with some of the things they're doing, and I'm very pleased with what my staff is doing for me. And these people are volunteers. They do it because of the cause. I know you have a lot of volunteers. That's the way that we try to work in the movement, and I'm very appreciative of what they do. On the right-hand side of the main page, you're going to find a major section about government cover-ups and stories that I've written about strategic threats of the coming decade, how to analyze the news. Many of the major pieces that I've written are there. You can now also subscribe to the World Affairs Brief online by clicking on the subscribe button. The World First Brief is my analysis service of those news events. It comes out every Friday. And if you don't have access to the web, you can call a toll-free number and get printed samples of the World Affairs Brief. The number is toll-free 877-518-5888. That's 518-5888.
Okay, fine. And let me suggest, if you're out in the listening audience, you want to get Joel's World Affairs Brief. It comes in on a weekly basis on email, something you want to read through from beginning to end. It's one of the two things I read every week when it does get here. So let me commend it and suggest to people, if you have an opportunity, go to his website or give him a call and get a copy of it. We're going to stay just about 3 minutes more. We'll wrap up the program, and then, of course, I'm off to Southern California first thing in the morning to give a couple of talks, and I'll be gone for a couple of days. But please stay tuned in, because we'll be doing programs, my afternoon programs I'll do from my hotel room, early morning programs from the hotel room, evening programs will be rebroadcast for the next couple of nights, and then right back to the regular schedule on Thursday and Friday evening. Well, Joel, what's the parting thoughts for this evening?
How much time do we have
left?
You've
got 3 minutes.
Okay, let me just give a little brief synopsis of what happened in Cyprus. Cyprus had the courage, that is, the Greek Cypriots had the courage to say no to the international community last week. The UN had basically threatened them with the Kofi Annan plan, which essentially was going to ratify the taking the occupied territories of the Turks. They were going to give back a portion of the land to some of the Greek Cypriots who were driven out of their lands in the Turkish invasion of 1974, but they were going to require that the Cypriots forever yield any rights to the majority of the lands that they had lost. One of the interesting things that happened, though, is that even though the UN claimed that they were going to respect the will of the democratic vote of this referendum, they immediately began, after they lost, the Greeks voted against it, to say, we're going to threaten you to death, you know, with all kinds of repercussions because you have rejected our pleas. What was interesting is that because of entering into the European Union, which they still do anyway, the Greeks said, you know, we don't have anything to lose by voting against this referendum. We're already getting in the European Union. And but the Turks had already made major concessions. They opened the border last month between the Greek, and they started to have cordial relationships because the Turks wanted to get into the European Union as well. And they began to talk with people who had their properties, and the Greeks began to work with the Turks to provide some way for them to yield back the properties and give some public housing for those Turks to move into. In other words, they were going to start to solve their own problems without the UN intervening. And I'm afraid what the UN wanted was another control agenda here, just as they wanted to Israel. And they tried to use this so-called peace plan, which wasn't a peace plan at all. It was really pro-Turkey. And this is after all the years that Turkey has been thumbing their nose at the UN resolutions to withdraw from the occupied territories, and now the UN was going to step in and confirm those forever for them. So we have another success story. I don't know how long it's going to last, but the Cypriots are happy that they rejected the international overtures. And once again, somebody wins here, and we should be rejoicing over that. I wish we'd win a few. We're saddled with a great deception here in the United States, and I hope that people listening to your program get a little bit of insight from yourself and myself about how they can see through what's happening to our nation.
I think the most important thing is to get people to begin questioning everything and to realize that there's a common denominator, and that common denominator is the New World Order and the New World Religion, and so much of what's going on can only be understood from that perspective when you understand it, that a lot of these things that are happening that just don't make any sense suddenly begin to be very obvious. Obviously, they know what they're doing when they allow these horrible pictures of Americans of humiliating the Arabs to be shown. They realize the implications. It's not a mistake. How else would you inflame the Muslim world against us? Well, Joel, we're out of time. Thank you so very much. We'll look forward to having you with us. I think you're going to be with us on Friday on
That's
our
correct.
Genesis program.
That's right.
And remind me to be sure to get the information out about your new website. Anyway, good night. God bless. Thanks so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Dr. Steve.
Bye-bye. Well, it's always a pleasure to have Joel Skousen with us. I hope you enjoy his programs as much as I do. And I hope he makes you think. Joel is a very perceptive individual. He has a good grasp of what's going on and certainly has access to a lot of sources of information I don't. So I always look forward to having him with us. I hope you enjoy his programs as much as I do. So this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, we do hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and to do that, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we hope that if you don't know anything about our ministry and want to get a free copy of our newsletter, just give us a call and ask for our March newsletter. You'll find out what was discussed at the secret cabinet meetings in the White House in January and February of the year 2001. That was 7 to 8 months before the 9/11 attack. I think you'll be surprised and perhaps horrified at what was discussed, and we're simply telling you what one of the people who attended those meetings, Secretary of the Treasury Paul O'Neill, said about that. His book has been attacked, he has been attacked, but nobody's ever told you what was in the book, because if you don't like the messenger, if you don't like the message, you attack the messenger. You never let people understand what the message really is. Well, we hope also you want to go to our website at www.radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs directly or indirectly 5 hours a day on the Internet. We're on American News Net. .com at 7 o'clock Pacific every time, from 3 to 5 Pacific, that's actually 5 to 7 Central Time. We are on GCN Online, or GCN Online or GCNLive.com, I'm not sure exactly which it is. And then, of course, our last 3 hours are on RadioLiberty.com. Please tell others about our programs, encourage them to listen. And then, of course, we ask you to tell others about our Internet site. Go there, pull down our newsletters, note the various items that we carry there. There may be some things that you'd find would be interesting in the way of water filters or other items that are available on our website that I think people should give serious consideration to the having. We do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will seriously consider joining with us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But we also ask you to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And until, well, I'll be with you live on Friday evening. If you're in Southern California, I will be speaking in Orange County tomorrow evening and Tarzana on Thursday evening. And then Friday evening we'll be with you live. But we'll be having some great rebroadcasts this next 2 evenings. We'll be doing live programs the rest of the time, tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, and the same thing on Thursday and Friday morning. So until we're with you once again on Friday evening, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.